Hey everyone, welcome back to Bad Gay Movies. Thank you as always for tuning in. On today's episode, I will be chatting with my good friend Anders Yates about the film Voyage of the Rock Aliens. But I wanted to record this intro because this episode is dropping a little bit later than I initially expected it to, which means that you might have missed the performance that Anders is promoting on here. So I wanted to also let you know that Anders is a part of the Second City Touring Company. He can be seen performing at Second City Thursdays, Fridays, Saturday nights. So if you are in Toronto, you will want to check that out because he is so phenomenally talented and hilarious, and I was so glad to have him back on the show. So enjoy.
Science. Their only vice.
We used to sit around at night watching old-time movie shows.
Is music.
You didn't know.
We didn't know.
Welcome to Bad Gay Movies. I'm your host, Bill Antoniou, and joining me today for the second time, I'm so thrilled to have him back. I'm so glad that he said yes. Actor, comedian, Anders Yates, who you will soon be seeing at the Montreal Sketchfest in May. Anders, thank you for coming back.
Thank you so much for having me again. It's such a treat.
It's a bit lighter in tone this time than last time when we explored
it's very different. Yeah, last time we explored a quote-unquote horror movie that I don't even know if it's qualified.
Yeah. The Dark Side of the Icelandic imagination.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe this movie could have used a little bit more of that. Today we are talking about Voyage of the Rock Aliens by James Fargo. This is a movie that like everyone and their dog has done on a podcast. So, you know, I'm sure that we won't, you know, rewrite the book on describing it, but we're going to do our best. Anders, tell me about, had you seen this movie before? Did you have any history with it at all?
I had never heard of this movie before.
Oh, okay.
You say everyone has done a podcast about it. Well, I haven't been listening to the right podcasts, evidently. I knew nothing about it. You know, you gave me a big, nice list of movies to choose from, and this one looked really different than any of the other movies on that list. And it also, as we have already pointed out, looked really different from the movie that I did last time I was on this show. So, that's why it spoke to me. But I had no history with this whatsoever.
That's interesting. I knew about this movie. I mean, they covered it on How Did This Get Made a very long time ago. Mm-hmm. Generally, if I do feel that a movie has been covered on other shows, I don't prioritize it too highly for us. But we've had a lot of people write in and ask us to do this movie. So that's why I had it on the list. And I'm glad they did because I'd always meant to watch it. And it was just not something I was going to, you know. What's tonight? Were we watching Tar or are we watching Voyage of the Rock Aliens? I am the kind of person who'd rather sit through Tar again. I mean, it's not officially a gay movie, but I was really surprised at how gay this movie is. This movie's pretty goddamn gay.
It's pretty gay. I would say it is very, very camp.
Certainly.
Because it was given to me as a list, in a list of movies for this podcast, I was wondering how gay it was going to be. It sounds like went into this with more prior knowledge of what this was all about. But yeah, it's pretty gay.
Yeah. I mean, it's all Craig Sheffer. It's all Craig Sheffer and wearing the tightest jeans I've ever seen in my life. He struts in looking like Annie Lennox in his opening scene. There are scenes where it's obvious that his abs have been brushed. Like they've been, he has abs, but like it's obvious that the makeup people have like shaded them to really make them show up. And then he's got that chain around his waist and through his crotch that just emphasizes his bulge.
Yeah. Oh, and there's so much like Tom of Finland imagery in the way that he is dressed and like the way that all of everybody else wants to be so submissive to him all the time and just loves being pushed around by him. Yeah.
Well, and then there's also, there's a scene where that alien turns on the stimulator to her love him, but then it makes all the men in the diner try to fuck him, not the women for some reason. No. And they basically pile up on him, and then one guy walks away and he's just like, I never felt that way about a guy before, but I found it kind of interesting.
Yeah.
What I find interesting about this movie, and it would be ridiculous of me to even point out that it's not a good movie, because that's sort of its point of existence, is the fact that it's, you know, that it's supposed to be like a Midnight Madness cult delight. Mm-hmm. But I find that it sort of doesn't quite achieve everything it should, even under those terms. And one of them is that, like, usually spoofs of 50s B-movies, as this one is, usually it's like Psycho Beach Party, where it's like everyone, it's straight teenagers, but like there's a queer sexuality happening underneath it all that is very obvious and no one seems to be aware of. This movie doesn't seem to do that deliberately. It all feels kind of accidental, or I'm not sure.
Well, I don't know. I was curious about, like, the sheriff, for instance. Like, that's not an accident that they've done some cross-gender casting there. But I was very curious. I wanted to learn more about the background of this movie, and I only took the time to read the IMDb trivia section.
Well, there's not that much more available on the web, unless you have to go deeper than I did, or you have to, like, attend an anniversary screening. But this movie's never quite reached the level of, like, Rocky Horror popularity that it seems to be destined for. Mm-hmm. And I think part of that is, we've talked about Rocky Horror a lot this last few episodes that I've been on for some reason. It's not even a favorite movie of mine. But movies that have, like, a really strong camp following, it's usually because they are ridiculous, but they have one element to them that's really outstanding. In the case of Rocky Horror, it's a really, really great musical score that is, like, a real musical score. And everyone in it is a really good singer, except maybe Susan Sarandon, but that's okay. She can get away with it. She can't get away with a lot these days, but she can get away with that. But in this movie, there's a inconsistency of tone. They are aliens searching the universe, mildly. Yeah, they're searching the universe for rock music, which they love. Why? Who cares? We don't need a reason why.
No, and we don't.
But this movie's idea of what rock music is seems to change in every scene. Some of the songs are good, but most of them aren't. And I can never understand the existence of Pia Zadora. She can't sing, and everyone's acting like she can. Her voice is terrible.
She definitely confuses me. I think that, okay, my take on why this never achieved a big level of cult success is that the ending sucks.
Yeah,
the ending does suck. Is terrible. And, I mean, to be fair, Rocky Horror does not have a great ending. It sort of peters out a little bit, but the ending, like, left such a gross taste in my mouth that I was like, well, I'm not gonna really, like, recommend this movie to other people. I'll talk about it as a curiosity, certainly.
It definitely spins out of control by the end too. Like, I don't quite know where the ending is supposed to be. Sorry, I cut you off.
No, that's all right. And just add that to all of the other reasons that you have mentioned, which I do agree with. The music is not good. Its idea of what rock is inconsistent. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like new wave is what it is. That's not rock. But then the one band plays, like, rockabilly, because the 80s were all about, like, 50s nostalgia anyway. So 50s, 60s nostalgia. The only thing I know about this movie is that it did not start out as a musical. It just started out as the screenwriters were wanting to write a spoof of 50s sci-fi B movies.
Right.
You know, that kind of spoof has always been a thing. And then they made additions to it as a musical. And then the early test screenings didn't do well, so they added...
Shocking.
The Pia Zadora Jermaine Jackson collab.
Oh my god.
What's that song called? The Rain Is Gonna Fall or something?
Yeah.
That's a music video that you're watching at the beginning that they sewed into the movie, which doesn't make sense because we're supposed to believe that they've stopped at another planet that doesn't pass muster as having rock music, but it's also got Pia Zadora on it. So,
yeah.
Why?
Oh.
In this weird, like, Mad Max modern day Casbah that these characters are all living in this music video. But I do like that song.
Oh, did you, did you clock this when they are, like, scanning planets?
Yeah.
The name of the planet that music video happens on?
What was it called?
It was called Asirema, which is spelled backwards, America.
Oh, I didn't even notice.
So they're trying to do like this cute, subtle thing. And then they like kind of present the most high production value.
Yeah.
Like with the most famous person thing. And then after that, the next thing that shows up on the screen is, yeah, that's a no. We don't want that.
Well, it's not even, they're not trying, I think, is what the problem is that this movie's not really trying. It's not made by, like, passionate nerds who are, you know, in the way that great culty things are, like the Evil Dead musical, or a movie that came around this time is called Starstruck from Australia, which if you've never seen that, is just an absolute delight. It's just about, it takes place in Sydney, Australia. It's just about a girl who wants to be, I've talked about it on the show before. She just wants to be, she wants to sing on, like, a local pop music show, and the whole thing is like wall to wall great songs. They're going to be showing it at, I think, the Lightbox soon.
Oh, amazing.
But it's available. I think you can watch it on Canopy or something. It's really, really easy to find. But it's a movie where it's just like, this movie is ridiculous and marvelous because it's, these people are so talented. Whilst in this movie, again, like, I get that it's not supposed to be Sophie's Choice, but these people aren't even trying to make a good movie of its kind. And what really doesn't help is that I think Craig Sheffer's a pretty good actor. I always found him really sexy, but like, he doesn't really read very strongly in this movie. His character has absolutely nothing to do except look sexy in those clothes. And then at the end, his outfit is for some reason Flintstoned and his jeans are torn and he's walking around very dangerous terrain barefoot, which made me worry for him. And Pia Zadora is not a star. Pia Zadora had one of the most disastrous careers of the 70s and 80s. She was married to a very, very, very wealthy financier who was like 30 years older than her. She married him in like 77. I think she was 20 something and he was 50 something. And he owned like every casino in Las Vegas. So when she made her first movie, which I think he co-financed, he treated the entire Hollywood foreign press to like free weeks and drinks and gambling at his casino. And then she mysteriously won the Golden Globe Award for best new star over Kathleen Turner in one of the worst reviewed movies of the year. And then she just made one bad movie after another. And and she also bought Mary Pickford and Douglas Fairbanks' house Pickfair and tore it down. And depending on when you asked her, she said it was either because of termites or because she felt it was haunted. Either way.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I fully believe that house was probably in very poor repair, but
like, it had and haunted. It probably was haunted.
It probably was haunted. But had a private buyer not purchased it, it could have probably been in some way restored to become a museum or something. But that's not the LA way. Anyway, so she's notorious. I mean, she's still pretty notorious. But I wish that she made up for it by being either brilliant in some way or even ironically brilliant in some way. The way that, I can't even think of a good example now, but people who are so bad, they're great. That you love them even though they're terrible. Like, who can I even think of? Especially from the 80s. I'm blanking, but.
Oh, God. I'm forgetting her name, but she played the Bond girl Christmas Jones.
Denise Richards.
Yeah, Denise Richards.
Or any of the Bond girls, like Tanya Richards or something. You know, like.
Sure,
I should say. That kind of, I wish she was that kind of bad. Yeah. But I just find she's just not interesting. It's amazing to me. She was like a star on Broadway from when she was a little kid.
Hmm.
She is a good dancer. When she has that big dance number at the end, you can see that she actually is a good or at least a very experienced dancer. But her voice is unpleasant and it doesn't suit the music in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's also playing a teenager and she doesn't look bad, but she doesn't look like a teenager.
No. Yeah. But I mean, well, that's a chronic problem for those kinds of movies.
It's true. And in the 80s, we did get used to watching like 35-year-olds playing teenagers. I often forget that, even though it's like it was my entire upbringing. And then I turned 14 and looked in the mirror and was like, I don't understand. I still see a child.
Yeah.
The sheriff is played by Ruth Gordon, the legendary Ruth Gordon, who, of course, is most famous for her Oscar-winning performance in Rosemary's Baby. She's 88 when she films her scenes in this movie.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And as you say, you think that they would do more with that. It's also supposed to be Cold War paranoia is behind most 50s sci-fi B movies. And that's what she's supposed to be lampooning, the fact that she doesn't care that people are buying guns because that's the American way. But but aliens landing from outer space is a threat because it could be a communist plot.
It is kind of hilarious how instantly she determines what is going on.
Yeah.
She looks up, she sees a giant guitar in the sky, and she's like, it's an attack. It's aliens. They've come here. She knows everything. She's got it figured out.
Nothing shocks her. And a telephone booth flying in from the sky.
Yeah.
I mean, and I want to love a movie that has a telephone booth as a spaceship so much more than I actually do.
Hello, Bill and Ted. Stealing it away. Though then again, I must admit that they both are just stealing it from Doctor Who, I guess.
I guess so. This movie, she makes this movie a year before she died, although she still had two more movies come out after her death at the age of, 89 or something like that? But a legend. I mean, this woman wrote movies in the 30s and 40s with her husband, Garson Kanin. And then was always an actor as well. And I wish they made more use of her. Maybe her age limited her in terms of how long she could participate, but why isn't she that? I mean, you talk about a bad ending. Like, there's a lot of strands in this plot that don't quite come together in a cohesive way towards the end.
Yeah.
In what, Daniel, would you usually refer to as a film having an internal logic, which is where this movie fails. And the thing with the escaped asylum inmates as well, like, it just ends up feeling like a lot of ado about nothing.
What is that B plot doing in there?
Like, I don't know.
Well, it's just, I understand. Like, I read that the writer was like, I wanted it to feel like you were flipping channels from like a horror movie to a sci-fi movie to a beach rock movie. And I'm like, that doesn't result in one cohesive movie though.
It should be more fun then, if that's the case.
Sure.
It should be like, again, this movie doesn't quite commit to being as outrageous as it should, because there's also a giant octopus that comes out of nowhere at the end.
Yep.
That I didn't get where that was. Well, and then
they seeded it early. It was like they showed it. Yeah. In the like early beach scene, like one of the first scenes you see on Earth, they're at the beach and that tentacle is sort of going around, and then they make that that fat joke where the fat woman is running and steps on the tentacle, and that's the only thing that keeps it from
taking a note. Maybe I was searching Treasure Island porn. It's been a while. I also love this movie opens when you see the credits. It says Voyage of the Rock Aliens, Let's Dance Tonight. That's the name of Pia Zadora's album upon which many of these songs ended up. So it's like a tie-in opportunity that probably didn't work out.
And like the songs don't fit the story being told. It's very obviously like, it's the kind of thing that I'm more ready to forgive when you're doing a jukebox musical of songs that we already are very familiar with and are happy to hear and like already know how it goes. So we can reinterpret or like find the meanings in the lyrics to make it match up with the story. But this is just because I don't know these songs anyway.
Right.
And they don't quite fit what's going on.
And they're not consistent. So that's the main problem for me, is that they're not all the same genre. And I think that might be also a reason why this movie has not found a dedicated audience, because it should be a kind of music, because then people who love that kind of music will be into it, or who ironically love it only for this movie. Because I think New Wave does suit the style of the film. Especially, you know, you got the aliens in there, what are clearly like 80s music video idea of alien outfits.
Love that.
But then why do we have like rock and rockabilly and then also this internal logic of these aliens who are, and I'm going to get raked across the coals for even searching for this level of like cohesiveness, but they are searching for rock music. But why? Because then at the end he tells her, I can't love you because we take beta blockers. We take emotional blocking medication so that we don't have feelings for each other, but music is emotion. So why are you searching for rock music? Are you rebelling? Are you, just one line to explain something a little bit further than you actually do. And why are you already musicians, but you're looking for rock music? Is it because you don't like your music, or because you don't think of your music as music? Just a little more. The tiny dolls that are awakened into full human people.
I love that.
Great. It's really great.
Yeah.
There's so many things that I want to love more.
Absolutely. This is a bad movie with lots of neat little flourishes. There were so many jokes that I wanted to love more. Right. There were a lot of jokes that felt like from the Zucker Abrams Zucker canon in a way,
sure, yeah.
that just were not executed effectively, that like they lacked the sense of pace, timing, tone that you need in order to sell that kind of humor.
Yeah.
And it was such a tragedy seeing like a really strong idea for a joke just kind of wither and die because it wasn't sold right.
Well, and also Craig Sheffer's character, like, why is that not, like, because I was looking up the director because I'm like, is the director gay? Because shouldn't it be more on the nose that Craig Sheffer's character is, like, tough and he beats up the guys and he's got the prettiest girls as his girlfriend, but he's actually, like, a gay porn fantasy? Like, shouldn't that be something that we're more, that we're addressing a little bit more directly, given that we see his perfect bubble butt the minute he walks, you know, like, he's so exploited in a way that she isn't even.
And so is he? Is he gay?
Not that I could find. I couldn't find much about him. The director is James Fargo.
Which I keep reading as James Franco.
If it was James Franco, everyone would be blowing everyone in this movie.
This is true.
James Franco is the most desperate to be gay heterosexual man that I've met, and I've met many of them. And quite frankly, he would be in a lot less trouble if it was teenage boys that he was messaging. Unfortunate, but true. James Fargo's first movie was a Dirty Harry movie in the 70s, The Enforcer, which is actually really good. And then he had a huge hit with Every Which Way But Loose, you know, which is also a Clint Eastwood film. That's like in the top 10 of its year. And then he just sort of flounders in the 80s, even though I'm assuming he would have been able to write his own ticket. I don't know much about him personally. He directed a really, really bad 80s sex comedy called Private Lessons with the very sexy Matt Lattanzi, where Matt Lattanzi is also viewed a lot more than the female lead of that film. And then he made a lot of TV, and then his last film is a movie called Born to Ride in 2011, starring Casper Van Dien, which is how you know that things were not going well for him.
Mm-hmm. But he has an eye for a type, you know?
Yeah, he certainly does. He's a Hollywood straight twink type.
Yeah.
Born to Ride also has Patrick Muldoon, who we all know that the most major thing Patrick Muldoon has been in is Juliette Binoche. And this director is still alive. He was born in 1938, and so he would be, what, 85 now? 84?
Wow. Well, James, if you're listening, are you gay? Tell us.
Are you gay? Or do you not know it about yourself?
Yeah.
You seem to have this, like, again, accidental appreciation of the male form. Because every time Craig is, but like, close-ups of him in this movie too, like the lips are glowing and the, you know, there's clearly a lot of makeup on his face to make him look ideal. And I know that they're making fun of a kind of 1950s teen beat fantasy, or not teen beat, but like a teen fantasy, like Donovan or something.
Yeah, but they're Fabian. I don't remember the 50s being that male sex appeal-y. Is that like,
well, the ideal males that appeal to teenage girls would have been, and that hasn't really changed since then, would have been like boyish, right? Like as non-threateningly sexual as possible. So
but they add to him a, you know, that more threatening, more dom quality. That's what I'm saying. Like, of course I get it that you know, it's always been, well, like Lisa Simpson reads Non-Threatening Boy Monthly, you know. So
because he's supposed to be the leader of the pack on the motorcycle, who is secretly like the good boyfriend, who is secretly like the
it's a well-kept secret,
right? But like, it's, again, it's just, it's a matter of inconsistency. And also his relationship with her isn't that interesting. Like her conflict of having to choose between him and the alien doesn't really happen. And it doesn't help that we don't really get why the alien sees her and explodes in desire, given that, and I don't mean this as shade on Pia Zadora, she just doesn't look different from all the other girls in the diner. Like, she doesn't seem special in any way.
Sure.
She's not dressed differently. She's not, you know.
She has the most interesting name.
What is her name in the movie? Oh, it's Dee.
Pia Zadora is an interesting name, but
It's a great showbiz name too.
Totally.
So her real name is Pia. Her mother's maiden name is Zadora because she's half Italian, half Polish.
Okay.
I can't remember what her real last name is, something Italian sounding. But and then it's who plays Diane.
I felt so bad for her.
Alison LaPlaca is the actress who plays Diane. She used to be on a show that I watched as a kid called Duet, which was like one of the first Fox TV shows when Fox began.
Oh, wow.
I don't remember anything about it except that I used to love it. But she's only 25 when she shoots this movie, and true to women in the 80s, she looks 42.
Yeah. With that hair. And is playing 16.
Yes.
Watching, there were like multiple scenes of her just having her body and her clothes like sort of like picked at,
yes,
and like smelled and groped and touched, and she has to play those scenes like, oh, this is weird, or this is making me uncomfortable,
yeah,
but it's not going to make me so uncomfortable that I'm going to do anything different fundamentally. Like the scene where she's inviting this alien band to play at the cotillion, like they spend the whole scene groping and prodding her, and she's uncomfortable, but she still is like, we really want you at the cotillion. I really want you there. And this happens again and again. And then she gets fucking chased by the chainsaw guy. And there's a great joke in theory where she helps him repair his chainsaw, but it,
well, that seems to be the only reason she's even in this movie plot wise.
Yeah.
And if she's gonna come in contact with us with an axe murderer or a chainsaw murderer and end up having a good experience with him because she's like, you don't even know how to fix a chainsaw, then why isn't she more sexually aggressive? Like, why isn't it in the previous scenes when she's being, yeah, like fingered by these guys in the park?
Ugh.
Why isn't she turned on by it or actively pursuing it? Like, hey boys, ready for another gangbang, so that we know that like she's kind, yeah, of off the wall crazy. And then it's a funny joke when she's the one who runs into this chainsaw wielding mass murderer.
Totally. And that would have made,
he's
so
the
much
one
more
that
sense
lives to regret it. Yeah. Or if they more emphasized, if they did an opposite joke basically, which is that she's so traumatized by these people and the way they treat her, and then the opposite comes out once she's,
sure,
in like a, you know, something like that.
Totally.
Again, it's all vague choices. It's nothing's committed to in this movie. And
well, they can't commit to a genre, they can't commit to a musical style, they
or
just,
to just the flavor of ridiculousness.
Yeah,
because again,
yeah,
I'm not watching this movie wondering why it's not Gandhi. I'm wondering why,
yeah,
it's not like, it's not what I expect a movie called Voyage of the Rock Aliens to be.
In a way, I almost wish that the people making it were like more incompetent, but more,
yes,
focused, you know,
yeah,
if they were really trying for something and failing utterly. I do love a big swing and a miss kind of movie, and that this is in some ways a big swing and a miss. And I appreciate those things about it, but it's swinging in kind of a flailing all directions at once. Kind
I
of
know what you mean. It's like, if it's going to be this bad, then couldn't it be like Ed Wood level where the,
yeah,
where the gravestones are being knocked over because they're clearly made of styrofoam. Like where it's,
yeah,
just like, you can't even imagine how someone awake was behind the camera. Because there's things like when they disguise themselves. They arrive on Earth and they disguise themselves in what they think is human costumes. They go into a diner and they don't even know how to, like, they don't know what to do with napkins or,
yeah,
it's like, well, if you're searching the universe for rock music, I my guess is you're only going to find it in one place. Why haven't you done any research on this planet that you have, you know, we're all Star Trek watchers. We all know how these things go. Why haven't,
yeah,
you done the slightest bit of research to find out how to blend in order to achieve the things you want to achieve?
Or on the other side, I'm going to go along with the idea that they don't know what's going on and they're incompetent in the diner. Why are they capable of doing so many other things? Why are they capable of even knowing to like walk in the door and sit down in the chairs around,
yeah,
the,
yeah,
the,
yeah,
table? You know, like,
yeah,
like, yeah, it's
especially given that they even know what rock music is.
Well, exactly.
And they know to call it that. Other gay moments is,
mm-hmm,
when Craig Sheffer walks into the diner, he rips that guy's shirt off.
Yes. Yeah.
And there's also Ruth Gordon, when she sees the alien in the sky, it's because she's scoping out what is a very like 80s gay porn top.
Yeah.
Working out,
yeah,
in his window. I would love to find an interview with her talking about making this movie, because I'd love to know what her perspective on it was. Because she was a wild and crazy gal, but at this point I'm sure she was just happy to make money. And I wonder, did she make much money?
Mm.
When Dee Dee is upset about Craig Sheffer, Diane says to her, my hygiene teacher says that this is normal behavior for young males. What is a hygiene teacher?
I mean, I think that was, you know, the very euphemistic term for sex ed.
Right. But I wonder, is that the movie thinking that, or was there a time and place where that was called that? Like, is, you know, American listeners reach out. Yeah.
This movie would invent a title for that.
Well, or are they playing a joke on, like, the sort of naivete of old movies that wouldn't talk about things and would use euphemisms for them, even though they just wouldn't talk about that at all. She would say her psychology teacher or something.
Yeah, I can't answer confidently.
The two lead men in this movie are also lip-syncing. Mm. Everyone else is doing their own singing, apparently, but Craig Sheffer and, what's his name, Tom Nolan? Yeah, like, is that his name? Tom Nolan, yeah. He was in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. He was in a bunch of movies in the 80s. And he was really pissed off that they had him lip-syncing. I guess because I think they'd already recorded the music when they hired him. Because everyone else of the aliens, they're a real band called Rema? I'm not sure. And then they added...
Rema, I think, is what the internet told me. Though it looks like you would say Rema. I was calling it Rema until I heard otherwise.
And they wanted, like, a real actor in the lead role of the alien. But he was really mad that they made him lip-sync. So he apparently... pursued a musical career along with the few movies he acted in the 80s, which is fine. Craig Sheffer is lip syncing, but the guy who he's singing for has a shitty voice. So it's like, well, if he's lip syncing, why don't you get someone better than this? I don't understand why the singing's not better in this movie. It's so weird. And am I wrong? Is Pia Zadora a good singer and this is just not the right style for her or not the right pitch? Like, you know.
Oh, I don't could know. Not tell you if she's secretly harboring. I mean, you know, she was you said a Broadway star for many years. So
from when she was a little kid, though. So I don't know. She's also there's inconsistencies of tone in terms of the place. She is the president of the first aid committee, which is something that you see in a movie set in a idyllic upper middle class suburb, kind of like a Peggy Sue Got Married situation. But they're in a shitty wharf town. So
called,
why is she the president?
Steelberg,
yes. Which I guess is in the north, but do they call it cotillions outside of the south? And then the guy who runs the gun shop is southern. So again, all over the place. I do like that the school is called Heidi High, though. I enjoyed
that. That was cute. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. In a school whose school dance has two bandstands.
I was taking notes during this, and when that happened, I was like, is this movie Scott Pilgrim? What is going on here?
I mean, that's a good example of a movie that is like, you know, it's nonsense, and yet it has everything in line. You know, its popularity is understandable to me. It's a movie that I only watched the one time, but I remember really enjoying it.
Yeah, I think it's great. I quite enjoy that movie.
And then, like, I don't get her character and what she's about, because she just, you know, she's in love with the alien, but then she's over it pretty quickly, getting back together with Craig Sheffer. And then she's also very comfortable being turned into a specter of light who flashes across the dance floor and then has a musical number ready to go with.
When I watched the opening Jermaine Jackson sequence, and, you know, I saw the little story arc that it presents where, you know, she falls for him, but then at the end, she goes back to her shitty boyfriend.
Yeah.
I thought, wow, that's a bummer. Well, I guess this is just the opening of the movie, and whatever comes next will sort of resolve or correct for that, like, downer of an energy. But instead, no, that was just a preview for the entire plot of the rest of the movie that we were about to watch, and the exact same thing was going to happen again at the end, except with no black people this time.
I love that opening song, but
song's great.
Yeah. But I know exactly what you mean. What was I gonna say? Well, yeah, because if she's going to go back to him, maybe there should be more of Craig Sheffer's character, who I can't even remember. I think his name is Frankie in the movie.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Is there enough of a turn for him?
No.
Because he's been a jerk, and then he's supposed to find his soft side because she left him. I love that he has a walk-in locker. I thought that actually made me laugh.
That was very funny. That was that was a good gag. There are good gags.
There are things that made me laugh. And then, like... And then, you know, he finally has his musical number. And then when they cut to him in the wilderness with his torn clothing, it is funny. It is partly that actor. Again, I do like him. I always thought he was sexier than Brad Pitt in A River Runs Through It. But I don't know that he's got a lot of, like, internal life that would be correct for, like, a wacky musical comedy. To say that I see the struggle of this, you know, this multifaceted character. But, yeah.
To be as awful of a character as he was for the whole movie, he needs to have a way bigger, like, fall.
Yeah.
Be in any way redeemed. You know, I'm not interested for a second in him getting the girl at the end.
Well, and the only reason why it makes even sense that she goes back to him is the fact that it's either him or an alien who's going to take her to another world where people don't have feelings and who doesn't love her. So,
or she could not go with either one of them. Yeah, why not just be single?
But that's not possible. How much sense does a woman make unless she's married, Andrew?
Yeah, you know what? I stand corrected. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's the 80s. You have to end with love.
It's the 80s slash the 50s slash who knows when.
Although she's pretty, you know, she is capable of taking care of herself. He takes her up on that spaceship and reveals to her that actually, like, this is what life is going to be like. And she's like, I can't do that. Sorry, bye. And then she knows how to exit a spaceship because she just walks out of the room. And I'm like, I wouldn't know where to go from there. How do I get back down to Earth? Is there like an elevator?
Oh my God.
And then he says to her, and then, oh, and he attacks the giant octopus by slicing off the very tippity tip of one of its tentacles. And then the whole thing just like, even though it's wrapped around the entire school, but then it dies. It's so funny.
They let the air out. Like,
yeah. And his big change at the end, Frankie's big change, is that he's willing to be a double act with her, because up until now it's just been him and his band, the Pack.
Wow.
And they haven't been including her, but he's like, now we're gonna be, at first he wants to say Frankie and Dee Dee. He goes, no, we're gonna be Dee Dee and Frankie, which in my opinion Frankie and Dee Dee actually sounds better, but good for you.
Yeah, great. I'm sure he'll really commit to that choice, and the 2 weeks later won't be sullen and like making people lick his boots to make him feel better.
That'll be for the sequel. I risk coming across as a pedant by reading too much into the logical lapses in this movie's plot and whatever, but again, internal logic is like a genuine thing to ask from these kinds of movies, and absolutely, it is interesting to me how I rarely ever see it being screened at like second run movie theaters that have Friday Night Midnight, you know, the ones that show The Room and that show Rocky, you know, Rocky Horror. You can find a screening of it everywhere all the time somewhere. And El Topo, movies like that, you know, like all these kinds of movies. And or the Rock and Roll High School is a really popular one too. I've never actually seen it, but that seems to be in a similar vein. And I do wonder, I do think that this movie has not built up the same level of affection from people, just because it doesn't quite hit in the way that this kind of movie should.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, in that opening sequence with Jermaine Jackson, this really stuck out to me and felt like a tragedy. They do this like big battle fight sequence, but they clearly haven't hired a fight choreographer. They just got the dance choreographer to choreograph the fighting, but they haven't let it look like dance fighting, because if it looks like capoeira stylized, then I can accept it totally.
Right.
They're trying to sell it as fighting, but they're only using their dance ability.
It's like a West Side Story moment.
But West Side Story even would, I would be like, no, this is a dance number and it's representing fighting.
Yeah.
Here they're like, no, they're fighting. Look at them fighting. I'm like, no, they're not.
And their outfits, the guys have these white, like Saudi Arabian Lawrence of Arabia towels on their head, but not quite. Like I was never sure what the look was that we were going for, that we're in like Morocco in the future or something like that. And it's another planet called America Backwards, but is like 1980s new wave styles. Her funky ass sunglasses are podcast on their own. Just the way that they even try to incorporate that into the plot is hilariously bad.
Yeah, so like I didn't know when I was watching it, because I went in cold, I didn't know that, you know, that had been filmed separately and was going to be at the end of the movie, but then they stitched it in at the beginning. So I'm watching it as like prelude or whatever, I guess. Well, I don't know what it is when I'm watching it, but then as we get to the main plot, I'm like, oh, okay, that was a prelude. And then I see all these parallels. So I'm like, okay, are you trying to tell me that the aliens are a stand-in for black people? Is that what's going on? Which I don't think they were trying to do. It just like, that was how it came across to me at the time.
Well, 50s sci-fi is almost always an allegory for how a capitalist society treats outsiders.
Yeah.
Because the writers were usually like Jewish communists, basically. Yeah. They were people who were being targeted in the 50s. And so this was how they expressed their feelings about the world in which they lived. So you could make it about black people. You could make it anybody that is treated as an outsider in a exclusive society, basically.
Sure. Though I don't find that like there's much to support that reading as the movie goes on. That just sort of seems to be
what it is. But as we've said, it's because there are so few defined choices being made that
exactly.
You can't, there's nothing to suggest anything, really. There's
the movie has no thesis, that's for sure.
Yeah. Maybe another reason why it's not as well loved is there are other hilariously, maybe intentionally bad alien movies in the 80s that people love more. Mm. I'm thinking of Liquid Sky what's the director's name? It's like 82 or 83, and it's about aliens who come to New York. They harvest the substance that people emit when they have sex. That's like something they need to harvest back on their
planet. It's called cum.
Of course it's, yeah. No, but it's not even that. It's like a hormone or something, like a pheromone. Right. I know what cum is, Andrew, even though I haven't seen any in 3 years. And of course, that's a situation ripe for exploitation, although the movie's not quite as exploitative as that sounds, but it is like super, you know, neon lights everywhere and very Cyndi Lauper, desperately seeking Susan aesthetic of New York. And it's great. Like, it's just great. And it's a time capsule of a movie, if ever there was one. And it's so great. And it's a movie that, as far as I know, I remember watching it on TV years ago, but I think it's been rediscovered and people are having like retro screenings of it and stuff. So I was expecting this movie to be along those same lines, basically. Because if you had talented people coming in onto the screen, saying that they're aliens and then singing wall-to-wall songs for an hour and a half, I would not complain one bit.
Sure.
I did not need this movie to make sense. I wanted this movie to make sense to itself, which is what it fails at. Yeah.
Yeah. I assume you've seen the Chilean film No.
Yes. Yeah.
This movie looks like
one
of the ads from that movie in the ad campaign extended to feature length. It feels like except if that happened, there would be more coherence and more like actual meaning attached.
That's so funny you mentioned that movie. I was talking about it with Greg the other day because I didn't really love that director's latest film, El Conde. I thought it was kind of boring, but No is still my favorite of Larraín's films. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great movie. Those cheesy videos, I was like, oh yeah, this is that exact aesthetic.
Yeah.
But with less thought behind it.
I wonder how that movie would be received now too. I mean, it's only 10 years old. It's not that old, but it is about the fact that all politics is propaganda, whether it suits your opinions or desires or not, you know, that everything, whether you're fighting for good or evil, is propaganda. And it's at the heart of all political movement. But yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I kept thinking of Third Rock from the Sun in some of the attempts of showcasing how the aliens were having trouble with the world. I did like the line, maybe he's into Scientology or something. Joke to make.
But what is that supposed to even mean?
Yeah.
Because the thing about alien comedies that are like the things like Third Rock from the Sun is that this character's appearance is supposed to make us see what we think of as normal in a new light.
Sure.
Basically.
Yeah.
By calling attention to it through the fact that they can't do anything that we take for granted.
Yeah.
And that's not like none of the characters clock that in this film. Dee Dee does not experience life in a different way because of their presence, and nothing is called into question, nothing that is treated as normal, which again is why it's so weird to me that it does have these accidental gay overtones, because you think that we would be making a joke on, especially in the 80s, the Reagan years, people had this obsession with a kind of masculinity and a kind of femininity being, you know, excessively binary. Mm-hmm. And you would think that the presence of the presence of aliens would make people question that or muddy that up in some way. And that doesn't really happen. These people barely notice that aliens are in their presence other than the fact that they make a mess in the diner.
Yeah. The lead alien band leader, he comes really easily. It happens automatically. Anytime he looks at Pia Sidora,
That's also like a gay porn look from the 80s too, that blonde hair that he's got. Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, anyway. All right, well, I thoroughly enjoyed talking about this film with you, Anders. I thoroughly enjoy having you on the show, and I hope you will do it again.
I hope you will have me again. This is always such a treat.
And I will hopefully see you in person. I haven't actually seen you since the last time you were on, so I have to actually make that happen, I think. Please tell our listeners where they can find you and follow you.
Sure. You can find me on Instagram at Anders Yates. It's just my name. Technically you can find me on Twitter or X, but I don't really post anything there anymore. So don't bother. Just come find me on Instagram.
Twitter is only... has only ever been there for people who didn't get a pony for their 16th birthday party. So this, you're not missing out on anything.
That's true.
I scroll for the uncensored videos of the porn stars.
Well, exactly.
On Instagram. That's its only use.
Otherwise I would have deleted the account, but I got to keep it for that.
Yeah. Got to keep it for that. All right. Thank you as always. And see you next time.
Till next time.